This also brings into question, right, the honor blades, which are very relevant to our quest that our characters are on, right? When did those become a factor? Are they added after, when the Herald people were like, well, we're not going to join our orders, but we still want powers, so let's do honor blades? Or, like, how do they come into play? It doesn't seem like our Herald's, like, Ishar is wielding an honor blade. Maybe he is in this scene here. So is it truly free for all? Is it, if you know how to do it, if you're trained, you can, anyone can use any investiture to do anything? Maybe.
Welcome back to Following Noadon, Stormlight Podcast. This week is episode 243, and we are in chapters 50, 51, and 52 of Wind and Truth. Elliot, how are you?
Doing great. Ready for more mind-bendy spiritual realm discussions?
Paul?
Doing fantastic. Yeah, once again, more major life-altering events, I feel like. I feel like that's the regular with this week. With each week is something crazy. Mostly just excited to talk more about this wonderful book, talk with you guys about it. It's going to be great. It's going to be awesome.
Do we have a patron?
We do. Yes. I'd love to announce, last week, my cup was a wonderful wedding gift. My wife, Alex, also lovingly reminded me that gift, that wedding gift we got, was also from my mother. So thank you, Mom. And so, yes.
That you definitely remembered and just happened
absolutely.
To bring up now.
I was trying to remain, trying to keep her, you know, reputation humble, you know, in an endearing way. Man, I need to stop talking. So this week we have a patron, another surgeon, very grateful. And it is Bram. And Bram, you are on a lovely Pringles can. So I frankly don't remember hardly which cups I have used and have not used. I look in my cabinet with fear every week, and I saw this empty Pringles can, and I was like, ooh, okay. I have not used a Pringle can. I know that much. So Bram, I hope you like Pringles. And we very much appreciate your support. I've never drank out of a Pringles can before, so I hope it does continue to hold water. I get nervous that it's somewhat cardboard or something and that it's just going to seep through here, but I'll get to, yeah, hopefully nothing bad happens. So thanks so much for the support.
I got to say this. I challenge anyone out there listening to find 243 different drinking vessels within your house. Because Paul, shout out to Paul for all the creative ways that you find to drink water.
And I do appreciate it, Elliot. The one caveat is I've had a different drinking vessel for every Stormlight episode. I think maybe some of our secret projects or maybe Mistborn Era 1. But I kind of took a hiatus because 243 is a lot. So we're only at maybe 150 or something.
That'd be my guess, too. Yeah, 140.
Roughly around there. And thus far, I don't believe I have repeated in a Stormlight episode.
On accident. There have been a couple.
There may have been close calls or maybe one.
There's been a couple that you've repeated on purpose. Like, you knew that you'd repeated, but you brought it back on purpose. But
That's true. Like, the mug that we have with our art on it, I've actually thought about bringing that back again, because it is really cool. But yes, yeah. Nothing unintentionally. No unintentional repeats. So every time I empty some container or something, I'm like, should this be my next cup? You know, I have that thought every time, honestly, nowadays. So.
Can we have like a fertilizer bag and
Something crazy. I will just openly share this because I don't know how it will work. So I don't know if it will happen, but I've really wanted to get a hose, like a direct like hose connection. I have yet to figure out how to make that work feasibly from my desk.
And you've got a window right there.
Making, You're right. I do have a window. However, I would need a very long hose. And I worry more about, you know, I'm okay spilling water on me. I'm a little nervous, more nervous about spraying water all over the room, you know. Oh, it's different. So I'd have to figure that out.
That would take some careful coordination with Alex as well. You have to holler when you want the water. She turns it on. Yeah, exactly. You spray yourself on the face. Cut it off.
Yeah, exactly. So maybe it'll happen. Maybe when we finish the book, I'll have to figure something out. I don't know.
And bringing it back to your Pringles can, it's sitting right next to your like $240 keyboard or whatever. I hope you don't ruin it.
I will be very cautious with my keyboard. I promise. It's my baby, so I'll take good care.
All right, Elliot. Summary of 50, 51, and 52.
Okay. In chapter 50, Navani, point of view to start, she's still just analyzing the portal as she stands next to it and talking to Face Melted Off Wit and learning little bits of information. And then a little bit of Adolin in the second half of chapter 50, he goes to visit the wounded at the camp and ends up running into Ash and Talm. Chapter 51 is Zeth, flashback Zeth, arriving at the Stone Ward Monastery for warrior training. His family's with him. They're just getting familiar with the camp and accepting their new life. And then the voice in Zeth's head leads him to do some interesting things, which I'm excited to talk with you guys about because I was rather confused. And chapter 52 is a big one. So chapter 52 starts with Adolin showing Yonagon how to wear Shardplate and then ultimately also teaching him the strategy card game of Towers. And then actually real quick, at the end of chapter 52, it comes back to Adolin and Yonagon, and Yonagon asks him the question that feel like all of us have been asking this whole time, Adolin, why are you not a Radiant? And Adolin gives him a specific answer, which is fascinating, and I'm sure we'll talk about it.
Yeah.
But the middle part of that chapter is a giant sequence with Kaladin, and some pretty major things happen here with Kaladin reminiscing about the past. He recalls the Wander Sail, Way of Kings, plays some music on the flute, dances with Syl, dances with the wind, all the things packed into a good 15 pages of the book there that I'm excited to dive into, but I think that covers it for these three chapters.
Sounds good. Paul, do you have two words to summarize what stuck out to you?
Yes, I do. Trevor, my two words this week are towers and practice. I think those, everyone listening and including you two probably knows that is mostly talking about Adolin and Yonagon playing towers and practicing in a sense. Yonagon gets to wear Shardplate, and it's really funny. We haven't seen this in a while. In the Way of Kings, I feel like it was a big point about how foreign shard blades and shard plate are to the average person. Crazy to wield and control and all the things, right? We see that for the first time in a long time, which is really amusing, seeing Yonagon just stumble around. And also we get practice with Kaladin. I think he practices his flute and making stew and all these things, and I think it's really endearing and nice. So yeah, towers in practice.
Elliot?
My two words are identity crisis, and shockingly, it has nothing to do with Shallan, believe it or not. I've got all the other characters wrapped up into identity crisis for these chapters. We've got heralds who are not like heralds. We've got Adolin not wanting to be a Radiant, or does he? And Zeth becoming a soldier, accepting his new life as a soldier, he who subtracts. And then, Yonagon is kind of wrestling with, am I a king? Can I be a warrior? Can I be a leader? Kaladin, though, probably has the biggest scene where he is really kind of going back over the who am I? And he and Syl have had this conversation a couple of times now so far in Wind and Truth. I'm excited to see where it goes through the rest of this. And he's wrestling with, if I define myself by protecting others and then I fail, what does that leave me as? What defines me? And there's a few more bits in here to talk about that. And I'm excited to talk about that with you guys. So identity crisis, not Sean.
Wonderful. All right. Chapter 50, we have Navani interrogating a couple different people in our flashback vision before we leave it of the portal. And then we have Adolin at the end of the chapter finding Shalash and Taln, who we were just informed is in Azir from our interlude that we just had. So Navani walks over to the portal and makes some scientific observations, as she does. She notices that Ishar, who she assumes to be Ishar, is holding the portal open. But then she also mentions that this is probably not a bondsmith thing, which I keyed into, because Ishar is a bondsmith, or at least modern day Ishar is a bondsmith. What did you guys think of that? Are there not rules to who can surge mind what back in the day, or what?
My first thought on this was actually, I've just been assuming up to this point that our heralds have always been surge binders of the orders and the surges that they're the heralds of. But does that necessarily have to be true? What if some of the heralds actually were doing surges of other orders or fully of other orders? And they, when they got together to become heralds, they decided they wanted a herald of each order and then just drew straws or, you know, picked people, you know, we don't know what the pre-herald, pre-Knights Radiant.
Question for you.
Yeah.
My question that I just thought of is, do we know that at the time that they're coming through this portal, that there are specific orders?
That's the category I'm peeling it one step further back than Elliot is. How do we even get to the orders part of splitting two surges into one order and we all share one with another one next to us? How do we get there? Because Bondsmith is not next to Elskaller on the Wheel of Radiance. And so back then, were there no rules? How did we get to the rules? You know, I'm asking more basic questions than what Elliot was describing there.
Yeah, that's been my question now is, could they all hypothetically use any of the surges? Like, it was just the surges exist and you can use the surges, but then out of an attempt to create order out of the chaos that happened on Ashen, perhaps the orders of Radiance were formed and the heralds, you know, headed that up and initiated that. But that leaves me with a lot of questions. First and foremost, at that time, okay, I'm going to ask my question and then I'm going to partially answer it with what I think we know. My question is, okay, if you don't have orders to begin with, let's say, and those are defined, clarified, let's say, hypothetically, by our heralds decide that, or something happens with them where it's decided each of them are going to, there's going to be 10 orders and 2 surges per order, etc. Fast forward to today, the order of Knight Radiant that you are is determined by the Spren. Ultimately, you cannot be a Dustbringer with a Mist Spren, right? Like it doesn't work that way. There's a rigid rule there, even though there is a bit large cognitive aspect with Spren, right? Did the powers that the Spren, if that's the case, I should say, do the powers that the Spren provide was that a result of the cognitive aspect of people were like, I am a wind runner and I have these two spread, or sorry, these two surges, and thus, you know, we know that spren are largely shaped by perception of people, right? Like, as a general rule of thumb, this is going a bit far, but yeah, did what came first, like the chicken or the egg, is kind of like the question that I have in my head here. Like, what happened? That is also assuming that there is not some radiant order system currently established. It is still possible that that is established, and that this is just a interesting situation, whatever. Things can change in these 10 years between Ishar becoming the herald of the bondsmiths and this moment when they're coming through the portal. You know, that could certainly change. Yeah. Do y'all have thoughts on that? Am I going way too far on that? But that's my thought, is like, how did these come to be? How did the orders actually start? And if we started it, then how did the spread affect it now, I guess?
So a few things that we know, or at least that we think we know, is the Knights Radiant was founded by Noadon at some point later of the humans showing up on Roshar. Surge binding existed before that, as we're seeing here, and it was used to destroy Ashen. So I'm going to make the assumption, or the guess, or whatever, that the Knights Radiant was founded as a tool to, as OSHA for the surge binding world. You need to have rules for these powers that you're wielding, and I don't know which way I'm going to go on the surge bind. Like, do original surge binders kind of just have all 10 and get to use them whenever, whichever order they want? Or do they only have access to one? Or do they have access to two and they just haven't been named yet as as orders? I don't know. And you're right, Paul, that we kind of originally assumed that, and this has been true up until these last two chapters, what does the spren have to do with this? Because the surge binding exists before the spren. So if you get, so at some point if in the future, if you get a wind spren, why does that then mean do you get adhesion and gravitation, right? Like, where does that come from? I don't know.
Okay, follow-up question. I've had the assumption this whole time that our heralds are of the fifth ideal. Do we know, like, factually that they have reached the fifth ideal? We know, okay, so Nail, as an example, we know in Oathbringer, he talks with Zeth, I believe it was in Oathbringer, he talks with Zeth about the, you know, the oaths and the ideals and stuff. And how, you know, with Skybreakers kind of unlock more things as they go through their ideals, etc. And we know that Nail can do all these things, so it's kind of assumed. But do we, like, know for certain that our heralds are a fifth ideal? Or, like, were the ideals a thing? Or could you say multiple ideals, and maybe that's the answer we were looking for? Of, like, before spren, maybe if you said these various ideals of different orders, you could obtain all the way up to maybe all 10 surges. Not sure, but that was something I thought of. Do we know our heralds actually have the fifth ideal, or is that just an assumption I've made so far?
It's an assumption that you've made, and I'll tell you why you made it. Because as we're beginning to learn more about our heralds, we learn it through the lens of Nail. And Nail says, I'm fifth ideal Skybreaker. And so you make the conclusion, all right, all the heralds are fifth ideal in their order. But that's not actually true. Nail says, I'm the only one who officially joined my order. The other ones just have the powers without the spread. So they're ideal zero and have all the powers anyway.
Okay. That certainly plays into what I was thinking. But yeah, Nail, I guess, is the oddball. I had forgotten that he was the only one who essentially joined his order, which is quite interesting. But yeah, that's my thought. I no longer have any answers or things to add. I'm just like, I have no idea.
This also brings into question, right, the Honor Blades, which are very relevant to our quest that our characters are on, right? When do those become a factor? Are they added after when the Herald people were like, well, we're not going to join our orders, but we still want powers, so let's do Honor Blades? Or like, how do they come into play? It doesn't seem like our Herald's, like Ishar, is wielding an Honor Blade. Maybe he is in this scene here. So is it truly free for all? Is it, if you know how to do it, if you're trained, anyone can use any investiture to do anything? Maybe.
Ooh, something to add to that as well. So we've learned from Zeth's point of views and flashbacks in this book that him and a select group, Zeth and a select group in Shinovar, have trained with all 10 Honor Blades, right? That may have been more historical practice. Maybe you might be right. It might be tied to the Honor Blades. This is conjecture, but don't we know that Shinovar was essentially where people landed? It was essentially the original place for yes. the Alethi, right? And they expanded from there.
Yes, in the flashback portal scene that we're looking at here, they're in Shinovar.
Yeah.
Pretty close to where Kaladin and Zeth are current day.
Yeah. I feel like it could be very feasible that, okay, I'm going to make the assumption that there are just 10 Honor Blades, right? I think it's very feasible that these are 10 Heralds. Had them, you know, no idea what, when, where, how, or why they had them. But, you know, they could have been swapped. I mean, I think it's very feasible, especially if we see kind of in the Shin way that they had people who would train with all the Honor Blades, right? I think it's feasible that someone, that the Heralds may have done a similar thing at this point.
Are you saying that they had them when they showed up on Shinovar? Is that what you're arguing
here? I guess.
Because I would argue the opposite.
Okay.
And I'll tell you why. Because they're called Honor Blades, and they don't know honor yet. So honor has to give them to them. So I would assume that's going to be one of our lies that we're going to go discover, is the Honor Blades actually probably weren't a good idea, even though we've been told they were a good idea. I'm going to guess that the Oath Pact is directly tied to the Honor Blades. So when the Oath Pact is formed in a couple visions that we're going to see here, probably, I assume that honor directly gives the Heralds their Honor Blades, and that is somehow a bad thing. That would be my guess.
Yeah, like maybe that's when they receive their first limits, if you will.
Maybe.
Like, okay, so we see Ishar here using Elskaller Surge Binding, right?
That's the assumption Devani makes. I'll put that caveat. Yes.
Yes, that's a fair caveat. But okay, let's assume that Navani's right, which this could be totally uprooted if she's like, no, actually it wasn't. It was a bondsmith power in disguise. Anyways, yeah, I see this coming to a point where we talked about maybe seeing a Tanavast point of view, which, fingers crossed, man, I really want it. I want it because it's on my bingo card, but also I chose that for my bingo board because it's a wish list thing for me. I really want to see Tanavast in some way, shape, or form. I think that would be a natural way for there to be, yeah, limits set for these people. Yeah, I think what you're saying, I feel like we could see that point of view along with the Heralds kind of getting that information at the same time on two fronts, which would be really cool. I'm probably just beating a dead horse at this point, but it's got me really thinking. about surge binding. I hadn't even considered this, but this whole scene of them coming from Ashen, which is totally on fire, really got me thinking.
Before we leave Navani's part of chapter 50, she specifically gets a hair ribbon or a hair tie from Shalash, which Elliot, in the outline, you're making the assumption that that's our next anchor. We're going to show up to the next scene and that'll be our next anchor. So that we're going to go ahead.
Yeah, that seemed to be, I'm trying to recall now who was telling some, the wind. Doesn't the wind show up?
Yes.
The wind is there and tells Navani, you need to get something.
It's not the Stormfather, is it?
I don't think so.
The Stormfather left last. Is it Wit? She talks to Wit.
No, it's the wind.
Okay.
I have it in my notes. I'm going to have to go look that up. I'm 90% sure it's the capital W wind who suggests to Navani, this scene is about to collapse. You need something to get you to the next scene. And remember, the rock that Wit gave them before they came into this whole scene is what got them there. I think they even see Wit come through the portal with the rock. And so she's able to get Shalash's hair ribbon, which I'm assuming now that's their anchor that they're going to use to link into the next scene that they're going to. I don't know what scene that'll be.
The Oath Pact.
Maybe. Could be.
Hope so.
Does she have to have the hair ribbon? I don't know. We'll find out. But I think the hair ribbon is the thing that now ties our string that's going to lead us to the next room.
Yep, I think that's a good assumption. We have Shalash's hair ribbon, which actually, I don't know if this is coincidence or what, but Adolin in the same chapter finds Shalash and Taln in the modern day Roshar and goes ahead and has a chat with them. And Adolin sees Taln on his back, muttering his rant, and turns to Shalash and says, "Is he okay?" And the book description is so funny. She looks at him with a huge icy glare or something. I'm like, yep. What else is she going to do? Of course he's not okay. What kind of question is that, Adolin? You got better tact than that. But I thought that was funny. But
it is really funny, Trevor. I want to point out that Adolin has become a character who has been very much a refreshing source of comfort, I think, for a lot of characters, notably Shallan, whenever she's struggling with whatever may be going on. But it's really funny because he's still very brash. You know, he's like, come on, bridge boy, we're going to go have fun type of thing. You know, like that sentimentality. But here it was just absolutely not the time or the place. And it was unfortunate. This was if you're in the room, you're just shut up. Just stop talking. Yeah, facepalm. Yeah, exactly.
Shalash asks Adolin a very interesting question. Shalash asks Adolin, are you worth it? Are the current day humans worth all of this pain and suffering? Is the Oath Pact, everything we went through, is everything you're going through now worth it to fight against Odium? If Shalash is asking that question after 4,500 years or however long it's been since the breaking of the Oath Pact, they've been at this for quite a long time, even before that. So Shalash is given up at this point. I feel like she was our sane one, and now she's giving up. Except for Batar, who's seems to be sane and shown and signed up with Odium, I guess.
Sane-ish.
Sane comparatively to the others, I think.
On a scale of Yezrian to Taln, she's...
Yezrian to Taln, that's a tight...
pretty one-dimensional scale.
Yeah, that's not much of a scale. That's just insanity, which is fairly accurate still for most of the heralds, but most of them are on that range, but some are a little better than that.
All right, chapter 51, we get a Zeth flashback, and this chapter we actually get center stage of the voice that's been chatting Zeth up for ever since he picked up the stone and smacked that guard. And it is not what, I don't know what I was expecting when we got a voice in Zeth's ear, but it's not this. It's like giving him tactical advice on hitting a dummy. What?
It's also, something's up. Something is major up, because when he first got the voice, it was the moment, the specific moment where he kills. And the voice pops into his head and goes something like, oh, hello there. I didn't expect you, or something to that effect. And we theorized immediately about maybe the unmade that we know is impacting this, is killing someone or killing someone in a certain way, opening you up to the influence of this unmade. Is there a characteristic that this unmade is keying in on or latching onto or driving? You know, all those questions that come up with unmade. And then, like you were saying, Trevor, in this chapter, it seems to be chiming in and giving him advice and saying weird things like, ah, yes, this is where you're supposed to be. And Zeth is thinking, you know, oh, there's a purpose for me. Oh, there's something I'm supposed to do. You know, those kinds of things. But then it just straight up makes a claim. It says, I am the spren of the rock that you used to kill that soldier. And I want to go on record right now saying, BS.
Absolutely not.
S. No way. No way. This is just the spren of that rock. This spren knows a lot of what's going on. It has full sentences that it is speaking in. There's no way rock spren who bonds a human for the first time is this literate, this logical. No way. No way. This creepy.
This feels like the first time that Zeth really falls a victim to some scheme like this. Like,
yeah.
It's honestly very unfortunate from our perspective, because we know how much Zeth and the Shen people and his culture revere rocks. And like obviously it made a huge deal about they discover a rock. And the question is, do we move the rock or do we move? Like it's a big deal. So I agree with you, Elliot. I don't think this is the spren of that specific rock that's this cunning already. But it's kind of heartbreaking to see if likely Zeth is beginning to be manipulated or something, and just kind of falling victim to it's a very targeted attack, you know, very personalized, targeted way to attack and to manipulate Zeth, which is, we haven't really seen anything happen with it yet, fully, but it's scaring me, that's for sure.
There's a couple specifics that I want to point out here. It can read his thoughts, and the voice is in his head, not audible. That tells me this is... Well, let me back up. A Knight Radiant bond has to be quite well established for that to work. It's not until like the end of Words of Radiance that Kaladin is doing that with Syl. And they mention that specifically, that Syl can't read his thoughts. Syl doesn't know what he's thinking. Swear the second or third ideal or whatever, and then you start having this mental bond with your spren. This is immediate. He immediately hears the voice in his head, and it can read his thoughts and then give him instructions. So I don't know where exactly to take that, besides the fact that this is not... I don't buy it that this is just a stone, like a random stone spren, I would believe it that it's a corrupted stone spren. Like maybe there's an unmade here that has taken over the spren of the stones, and now the stones are beginning to talk. Or has that always been a thing in the religion that the stones talk?
Maybe there is something tied into the religion. I didn't think about that. Although that could be related to where I'm about to throw out, which is we are, as of this book, tracking a couple of entities, gods older than the shards. They are the wind, the night, which I think we've gotten told, or at least referenced in conjunction with the Night Watcher. The night. Yep. These are capitalized in the book, by the way, the wind,
this
the night.
Syl explicitly spells this out in the next chapter, 52. Syl says it's all called the old magic, but that was mostly just through history. They just applied that to the Night Watcher, but it applied to these other two things that you're about to say.
Yep.
Way back when.
Right. And the third one is the stone. Capital S, the stone. What if this is the stone, the way that Kaladin's been speaking to the wind, and Navani, we just talked about it, spoke with the wind in the flashback there. What if this is the stone, a much larger, wiser, more active entity, and its claim to be, oh, I was the stone that you used. Maybe that's not completely false, perhaps.
Yeah, this is really fascinating. This is really interesting. So if we are going to think pretty literally, if we're thinking of the wind and we're thinking of the stone, right? You think of the stone, my brain goes to like the actual physical rock and vessel of the earth, like of the planet Roshar, right? Therefore, like this stone that Zeth used, that what the voice said is truthful, that I am actually, that stone is actually part of me, that one stone, right? Not necessarily what we might think of like the spren of the little lesser spren of that specific stone, but that could be why the Shin Revere rocks so much, is it's part of the greater, the stone that makes up the earth of Roshar and is to be revered, etc. Right? That makes sense.
Are you going down the route of like this is Roshar talking? Like
essentially.
We have the wind talking, now this is Roshar talking.
Essentially, yes. But I want to ask y'all what you think, because that's the literal interpretation, I think, if you will. But I'm not sold that is what's happening. And what is really going on here. I've been very intrigued, and honestly, I'm just confused by the old magic. Like, it doesn't make sense to me. I don't understand it. I understand the push and pull of Radiant Orders and powers and the Nile Bond and ideals. I understand it. I do not understand this, what it is capable of, what it does to begin with. Do y'all have any more information y'all remember? We our one clue in my mind is the Night Watcher. We know a little limited information about the Night Watcher, but I feel like that doesn't answer any of the questions that I want to know about. I'm really pretty stumped on this. Do y'all think it is like a literal, like this is the embodiment of the wind and the planet or stone of Roshar? Or are these just fun names for other entities?
I'd be open to this being quite literally Roshar. And in the next chapter where the wind plays the flute so that Roshar can listen back and all that stuff, I could be convinced that this is all quite literal, that in Shinovar, Roshar talks through the stones. I don't know why it wouldn't elsewhere, but, you know.
Also, I'm wondering why Zeth Like, why? Or is it not just Zeth? But Zeth is obviously the one being focused on here. We had a big talk in the past, like in this scene that we see Zeth kill the soldier after Molly dies and the whole thing. And we had talked, I don't remember if it was that episode or one before, about the Dust Mother, another unmade, right? I feel like that's still a very strong, plausible theory for who this might be. We've assumed that there's unmade, at least one involved at some point with Zeth's story. We kind of know that's the case, but we don't know the ins and outs. I don't know if this is manipulative or if this is so the reason I'm questioning so much is because we have seen this notion of the wind talking to Kaladin. And I still don't understand that. The wind has said things like basically Kaladin's mission, what he's going to do, may ultimately prove to be more important than the contest of champions, which is a big deal. Like, that's a huge deal. And I don't know what's happening. I'm in this holding pattern right now where I just have so many questions about the old magic, about the wind and the stone probably specifically. And I sure hope they're answered. That's all, I guess. Fingers crossed.
I'm hoping the same, and I don't really have any crazy theories yet. It could be Roshar. I feel like these are new powers that I'm hesitant to tie them to anything specific we've already known. This feels different. I'm not 100% sure why.
I think the odds that they get answered are fairly high for you, Paul, so keep your hopes up.
Sure hope so. Yeah.
All right. Chapter 52. This chapter is pretty cool, in my opinion. This might be my favorite chapter up until now. Maybe this one, or maybe the chapter with Dalinar and Kaladin talking about the Kaladin inheriting the tower or whatever on the mountaintop. But it starts with Adolin and Yonagon, who I've been enjoying quite a bit up until, or including this scene. Paul, they finally sit down and play towers. You have been asking for this for several episodes now, and it happens.
Yeah, I was really excited. I will say my hopes of maybe a towers game being produced and released, I feel like my hopes for that were a little bit dashed. It seemed a little complicated, a little complex, a little unrealistic, I guess, in a board game or sense. So I feel like my hopes were dashed a little bit on that, but it was very neat to see. They talk about all sorts of strategies and formations and defenses, and I liked, you know, Brandon put a good bit of thought and complexity into this little in-world strategy game. Resource management, you know, Adolin teaches Yonagon this sentiment of if you have three rounds, and if you utilize all your resources to win the first round, then, you know, you don't get those back if they're expended, right? And you have to budget accordingly. There's risk versus reward. A lot of really neat game theory sentiments I feel like were passed through in this, which was really enjoyable. I really liked it. So yeah, we finally got this moment of them playing towers. I thought it was super fun.
I gotta wonder, we know that Brandon is a really big Magic the Gathering player and loves it. How much of this game in his mind is maybe related to that of strategy, resource management, card driven player versus player game? I definitely thought of Magic the Gathering.
I really enjoyed the detail of the rounds that you were just talking about, Paul. He's definitely sat down and theory crafted a game. Maybe not like the whole rule set, but he's theory crafted, okay, how could I set up a game, a card game, that could teach cadets some war theory, some game theory on the battlefield. And if you, you know, commit all your resources to the first round, maybe you lose the second and the third round, and that's how the game is supposed to teach young cadets. I thought that was a really cool detail. And also, alongside that, just as an aside, I think this type of scene is some of what Sanderson does the best with his writing. I think if, as he establishes characters and you get to know characters, then putting them against each other and having them interact, and Yonagon has specific wants and needs of wanting a friend, wanting to be called by his name, wanting a good conversation because he's not allowed to talk to anyone. Like, and then having Adolin, who wants a pupil to play cards with, like, because he just wants some reality or some normality in this crazy world that he's found himself in. Both of those characters thrust into this scene and then behaving as you would expect them to, having good dialogue between the both of them, I think is something Sanderson really thrives at. And that was portrayed well in this scene, is what I found.
Yeah, Trevor, I actually can't echo what you said enough. My favorite thing about all the Sanderson books that we've read is his characters stand so independently. You could absolutely tell or get fairly close to predicting what conversations between various characters who have never met or have not, you know, interacted recently would do if you put them in a room together, like what they might say, how conversation might flow. And that is really impressive and really satisfying to read, especially whenever there's crazy dynamics that you really want to see, you know? I think that's an absolute highlight and masterpiece. And I'm also impressed, like we've talked about this a bit. I feel like Yonagon has been the up and coming star in this
the
book.
Dark Horse. Like,
yes, exactly. Like someone that I could barely have told you who he was before this book, honestly. Like, I'd have to think back to, like, okay, when have we seen Yonagon? What was he doing? What have we seen about him? And here he is, you know, just really catching my attention, really awesome. And spending time with Adolin has been really cool. And I'm excited to see where this goes. I'm imagining that this will... Adolin will continue to inspire things in Yonagon, and we'll just see more come from it. I don't know what that might look like, but yeah, it's been really well done and definitely a huge tribute to Sanderson's character writing, how well he writes characters.
See, now I feel like the wet blanket on this podcast, because now I'm going to come in here and say that I think Yonagon is kind of boring.
Sorry.
No.
Sorry.
He used to be.
He still is.
Okay, so Elliot, I understand your point, honestly. I don't think that's a super hot take, because he's a character who is learning, right? Like he is having to learn a lot of what we might consider basic fantasy hero things.
Yeah.
Step by step by Adolin. You know, he's not coming in and it's like awe-inspiring. Like Yonagon steps in the room with a commanding presence as this leader of a nation and is like really cool to follow. Like he's kind of, and I don't think it's his fault, it honestly reminds me a little bit of like Warbreaker and like Sisebron, was that the right name?
Yep.
Different sense, but basically this this king figure that is so highly esteemed by his people that he's effectively not been allowed to do like anything. Any what you might call like real world experiences or things like that. Like he's very well trained in the political sphere and things like that. But he's basically learning how to be like a person here, which is not necessarily the most exciting like content, especially when it's pitted against, I feel like if this was happening in like books 1 through 3, any of them, any of those books, you might get more invested because of, you know, obviously there's exciting stuff going on then too, but it's like you're switching from crazy new reveals and announcements, like the stone and the wind, the old magic, the literal moment when heralds open up the portal before they become heralds and walk to Roshar. And then you're like having a little chat where this king is basically learning to be a person. Like it's a bit jarring. So I think what you say is very fair. However, I do think Yonagon is pretty cool. And I feel like this is going to culminate into something pretty awesome.
I think you helped me understand my thoughts quite a bit there, actually, because everything you said there, I'm nodding my head going, yeah, that's exactly right. Is I feel like we have such bigger and more, in some ways, interesting things to worry about other than, oh, let's learn how Shardplate works again, kind of thing. But I don't want to gloss over the character element of it, because I do think that could be really powerful, especially if there's a big payoff coming. If there's a big Yonagon moment coming, and we're going to look back on this as, oh my, how powerful was Adolin's influence of reaching out a hand and connecting with Yonagon where no one else does or can or is able to. That could be powerful, and Brandon's really good at that kind of character payoff, so I could absolutely believe that that's coming.
I'm frankly getting a little bit of flashbacks. It's a bit different, but I'm getting a bit of flashbacks to Elokar. They're coming from very different starting points, where honestly, when you read The Way of Kings, you kind of can't stand Elokar. He's complaining and paranoid and not a good, I don't have to explain it, right? And then you get these scenes where he's starting to learn. He's starting to step up, like more development is happening. And it comes to a really pivotal moment. He acts out in faith and, you know, says the ideal and then dies. And it was very tragic, of course. I'm not saying this is going to mirror that, where he steps up and says an ideal and dies. But it feels like that. Like, we're kind of rapidly beginning to appreciate or maybe rethink what we knew about Yonagon. There's got to be a big moment. And I don't know what that is. I don't know if that's going to be him standing at the front of the line and leading his troops into battle, and that'll be cool, or if it's tragic, who knows. But obviously this is going somewhere. We've spent considerable amount of time with this guy.
I wonder if Elliot's apathy towards Yonagon is the audiobook Michael Kramer Wayne effect from Mistborn Era 2, where us audiobook listeners really enjoy Yonagon because Michael Kramer's performance of him. I just had that thought because Elliot wouldn't have listened to any of the audiobook on Mistborn Era 2 except for our accelerated schedule, which then had Elliot create more affection for Wayne. So I wonder if
that would happen. I almost 180 my take on Wayne changed hearing him performed. There were so many of his lines that just fell flat, but it turned out it was just my imagination was not doing Wayne justice. Maybe that's true. Maybe I need to go get the audiobook and see some of these Yonagon scenes.
That is a fair point that I haven't even considered, Trevor. Michael Kramer, everyone knows this. If you're listening to this, whether you've listen to the audiobooks or not, you probably know Michael Kramer is fantastic in all these books, all the Sanderson books, and he definitely delivers here. It's pretty fantastic.
To close chapter 52, before we get to Kaladin's portion, Adolin delivers the line, "I don't like the oaths." And I heard that today. I finished this chapter today before we were recording, and I was like, what? Adolin, what? But his reasoning's fine. So I'll give it to him. He says, I don't like the oaths. I don't like the Knights Radiant because I know some old Vorin people in the Vorin Church who applaud the oath for the oath's sake and not what it means. And I was like, okay, fine. I get that. That's not a good reason to not like the Knights Radiant. That is a good reason not to idolize oaths for oath's sake. So that line went somewhere fine, but I did have quite the reaction when I heard that, but his reasoning was fine and the delivery was fine. What'd you guys think?
I liked this section in that I liked Adolin's logic of the oaths. I think I agree with him. Holding to an oath for no other reason than it's an oath is not great logic. It very much matters what your oath is about. 100%. Is there value? Is there virtue in being a man of your word, a person who follows through on your promise? Yes. But you also have to be willing to accept when you are wrong or that you need to change your tact. So I think I kind of agree with him. I'm not quite sure where this is going, though. What are we setting up with this? Is Adolin going to have to be faced with like a choice? Does he make an oath? Does he not make an oath? I'm not quite sure where this is going.
Didn't we talk in a recent episode about, doesn't Adolin express his concern or maybe even some feelings of disappointment or inadequacy because he is not a Knight Radiant? Or did I make that up? We talked about that not too long ago, right? Yeah.
He's had internal thoughts of everybody's flying around now and I'm just Adolin. He's had internal dialogue several times over the last couple books about that.
Yeah. I think this is a very interesting So in this chapter we see Adolin kind of helping Yonagon, but and that's been a large point of this whole storyline with Adolin in this book. It's him helping to guide Yonagon and to help guide other people. I'm blanking on the name, but the other guy who was almost a Windrunner and several other characters around.
Koloth.
Yeah, Koloth. Yeah. You know, he's really been a very honorable guy, but we've gotten these hints to where I would not say that Adolin feels discontent with his station or with being or with not being a Knight Radiant, but he certainly has these thoughts every now and then of, you know, I think his concern before was like, you know, being a Knight Radiant, everyone is flying, everyone's a Knight Radiant now, I'm just still me. And he kind of had reservations if he wouldn't want to like leave Maya or things like that as well. And then this, it's like the whole, I don't like oaths and here's why. I've been really wrestling with this because we've thought of, you know, what if he will become a Knight Radiant or if Maya will be restored enough where they can have a formal like Radiant bond, what this might mean. I really don't know what to go. Honestly, you want to know my crazy thought is I think if anyone is most likely to receive the Shard of Honor right now, call me crazy, I think it's Adolin.
You're crazy.
Trevor shaking his head. They're both shaking their heads. Yeah, I'm crazy. It's fine. But I'm like, he seems to be the reluctant one, and everything, if we're trusting what the Stormfather says, everything he's saying is that you can't want the power. And Adolin doesn't. So that's my argument for it.
That's true. I was about to slam you and go a whole nother direction with it. But what you just said there at the end, that's kind of true. That's kind of true of you can't take up honor unless you don't want it or are thinking about it the right way. Maybe this is Adolin thinking about it the right way. But I was thinking a completely different direction when I read this of this, for me, feels like it's putting Adolin on the opposite end of the spectrum of honor. That what Adolin is talking about here as the oaths that he doesn't like are potentially the flaw of honor. We were talking about this last week in our episode of, is there some sort of problem with honor where oaths are being followed when they shouldn't, or honor accidentally breaks an oath and shatters himself, splinters himself, whatever. Does that like align Adolin elsewhere with maybe gravitate him towards other powers that are not honor potentially? That's where my brain was going.
You cut out there. Gravitate him towards what?
Gravitating towards other powers that are not honor. Is this putting him on the other side of the spectrum from honor and maybe pushing him towards a cultivation path or, oh, I hope not, an odium path, you know, something like that?
I could see
cultivation
it.
Is actually an interesting one. I don't have to go into that because I don't really have any further substance to add.
Maya's a cultivation spren.
Yeah, there we go. And I feel like you could attribute the interactions that we've seen him have. I've been thinking of them as an honorable thing to do to fit the prediction I just made. But, you know, he's really stirring I feel like cultivation or that sentiment is maybe more in line with what's happening. So that'd be pretty crazy. But, you know.
Alrighty. Time for our poetry on page scene. We have Kaladin dancing the evening away with Syl. He makes a stew. Apparently he acquired some peppers, so it is edible at this point. He reads the Way of Kings. Syl writes a letter or a report on their day's issues. And they perform a kata with him spinning Syl around, and then on some moves he spins her around as a woman, and then she returns back to a spear, and they are dancing in a loose sense of the definition of dancing, but it is a performative kata. I really enjoyed this scene. What did you guys think?
I thought this was great. It caught me a little off guard because we shifted gears fairly hard of battle scenes, visceral Zeth killing people scenes, and then we get this very almost whimsical remembering the good old days, thinking about the Wander Sail and the playing bad music on the flute, doing this dance. It was very, I wasn't ready for it, but it was still very, very beautiful.
Yeah, it didn't feel like a Kaladin moment to me, I guess. You know, we've come a long way with Kaladin's character, so probably need to get more used to it. But yeah, I wasn't expecting Kaladin's end of the chapter here to be cooking and then playing the flute and then dancing. You know, dancing as in doing his kata, you know, but it's definitely portrayed that way in a sense. So it was interesting. I felt like it was a little bit cheesy, if I'm being frank, but not to the point where I'm going to like complain about it. But I do think, once again, I think we are giving the Kaladin Syl marriage, the people who want the, what's the Syladin, Syladin, Calafrena, whatever it is. The people who are like staunch in them falling in love and living happily ever after as a couple. I think this is just even more fuel on the fire for that. Just whatever. That's fine, I guess. But I thought it was a little bit cheesy, but yeah. Not bad. I'm not going to complain about it.
So when I heard the line, Kaladin needed to do something for himself. What did Kaladin want to do? He wanted to dance with Syl. I said out loud in my car, oh no.
Yeah. I know,
right? But it didn't go there for me. It was way more like friendship and wholesome, and because it was like a kata and it was a person to person like performance, it didn't go to like the Siladin thing for me, even though I could totally understand how it would for other people.
No, and I do fully agree with what you're saying. You're right. It was funny. And that's what I was saying, was it almost didn't feel like a Kaladin moment whenever he was like, I want to dance with Syl or whatever. Like that's what I think felt a bit cheesy. But the actual like kata, and he talks about how he hasn't done this kata since he was like teaching it or doing it in the chasms,
yeah,
which is a really cool thing to bring back, because that was a really awesome scene at that time. I'm all for that. I thought that was funny. It definitely had I think it was 70% cool, 30% a bit silly, you know?
Sure.
Yeah.
The line that Kaladin has in his head, or the narrator has, is back then in the chasms, Kaladin wouldn't wield a spear, and Kaladin wielded Syl now, and she wasn't a weapon, she was a woman. That line worked for me, but I could totally understand how it wouldn't work for you. I do understand that.
I enjoyed this scene. I took it at face value and didn't try to read too much into it, of just a honest, open Kaladin moment where he's exploring some of his more inner thoughts. It's less of the hard, crusty, cranky Kaladin, and more of the kind, open to having fun and just laughing and doing something silly for a little bit Kaladin. It's not quite what we've seen from him before, but I feel like it's a direction I'm totally fine with us going with Kaladin. There was even a moment in the midst of it that almost felt like we might be moving in the direction of some kind of ideal. Did you guys catch it?
Where the wind shows up, or?
Well, so the wind shows up at the end and some interesting things happen there, but I think it's before that. Just trying to check and see if the wind. Yeah, I think this is before the wind. There's some, this might be a reader thing versus the audiobook. There's a few sections where they're in the midst of this dance, and it splits out some of his thoughts as their own paragraphs, and it italicizes them. And they are, I deserve peace. I deserve to be happy. I will enjoy this. I will let myself enjoy living. Those kind of put together, it doesn't align with any of our ideal paths that we know of, but the definitiveness of those statements and the accepting something onto yourself felt very much like a radiant ideal almost.
Yeah, I could see that. I didn't read it as such, but you pulling it out like that, I could see that.
No, I do agree, Elliot. I did feel, I think what you were feeling with that. It definitely, the definitive statements and the certainty and the nature of it, of being something that Kaladin has not really realized for himself for the whole time we've been following him. Like, kind of accepting that is a big deal. That's a big step. And so it did feel like that. It didn't, like, exactly like you said, we've made all sorts of predictions for a while now of what might be Kaladin's fifth ideal. What could that be? What would it mean? And this didn't feel in line with any of those. And I think it was clear that this was not one, or at least not quite. If it is related, then we'll get there. But yeah, it did have that air. Like, it had the air of like, these words have serious weight. Maybe that's just an acceptance moment for him. That's not his ideal, which is great. Like all for it, all power to him. But yeah, it definitely held some weight, and it was quite a way to wrap up the chapter. Now we just need, I just need Zeth to follow suit with some of these thoughts. But
yeah, Zeth, Zeth like disappeared. I don't know what happened to Zeth at the end of that chapter, but he's left all three of his swords on the floor and disappeared.
Yeah, no idea where he's going to now. Maybe he's going to pick up the stone or something.
Yeah, I forgot his rock back at the house. He's going to go pick it up.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He missed his old rock friend. Pet rock. Yeah.
The wind shows up, and does the wind start playing the flute? Did I make that up?
The wind starts playing the flute.
Okay, the wind starts playing the flute by itself, and then Kaladin goes and picks up the flute and plays with the wind, right?
Yes.
Did anything happen with that? Did I miss that? Or does he just start playing it more and better?
More and better and in sync with the wind. I feel like this is the first time where he's playing with the wind. And then I think there were a lot of things happening at once. So I'm not sure if I interpreted it correctly. I have to go back and read it a third time. But I think what happens is he finishes playing and he's waiting for that moment that Wit had where the wind plays back to him or Roshar echoes the music back to him. And that doesn't happen. But there's an interesting line. I'm not going to be able to find it off the cuff here. But it was like the wind accepted the music and decided to hold on to it for a future moment or something like that. It felt like a step in that direction.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's when he turns around and Zeth's not there.
Correct.
Okay. Yeah.
So, getting closer to Wit level. Hoid level.
And is this the flute that he just got, or is this his original flute that he...
This is the one he just got, I believe. I don't think we've ever got an answer about the original flute. I think it was just lost, right?
Well, it was lost with his stuff in the Shattered Plains, but he got most of that stuff back at the end of Rhythm of War. But it was also just mentioned that he lost Wit's flute, so I think that flute is still lost. I actually don't know. But anyway, anything else from these chapters? We're going to have a little bit of a special segment at the end of this episode, but within the episode, anything else here?
I want to hit one more thing real quick. I mentioned it briefly with my two words on identity. And in this Kaladin section that we've been talking about, it's actually early on in this before he starts the dancing and the flute playing. It's back when they're talking, Syl and Kaladin. And he says this. With Bridge 4 in the early days, I had this mental need to help. So when I failed, it broke me. Even more than the loss of a dear friend should have, because I was so defined by the idea of protecting others. And he and Syl are having this ongoing conversation about, you know, are you living for you? Are you living for others? Who are you? What defines you? And I thought that was just a great question of, does Kaladin define himself as I protect others? He might. Those are like part of his ideals. It's been huge in his character development from day one throughout all of this. But I feel like this is pointing out potentially the danger in that of if his core identity is rooted in protecting others, and then he fails at that, where is he left? Is he just broken? Is he just nothing at that point? It seems like he's kind of discovering, I need to define myself by something else. And they don't quite go into that. I'm assuming that's going to be a future conversation. I'm sure it is with the direction of where this is going. But I just thought it was a great question of, do you define yourself by the things you do or the goals you have? Or is there something else that you should define yourself by? I think it's a great question.
Thanks for highlighting that. I appreciate that. Anything else before we wrap up the episode?
That's all I got.
Likewise, yeah.
All right. Next week, we will be doing... Hold that thought. 53 through I-8 for episode 244. That's going to close the episode here, but we are going to do a quick check-in with our Wind and Truth bingo cards that we made before we opened the book. So if you're not on YouTube, you might want to jump over to YouTube for the last however many minutes of this episode. We're going to look at some of our predictions that we've had. Let's do my card first, since I have that open. I'm going to, okay, well, let's start with off with this one. Cultivation is the mastermind behind the plot. I need a 3-for-3 vote of whether I can check this off or not.
I would say yes. The interludes we've had so far have clearly revealed that she's had an intent for Teravangian and Odium, and seemingly a lot of the events that we've got. Is she behind every single thing? I don't know, maybe. Is she a master behind a lot of this? Yes.
I'd also give it to you. I'm naturally apprehensive because we don't know fully the extent, but we know she is pulling massive strings. So I think that the spirit of this prediction is fair to cross that off. I'd give that to you.
Okay. I have one. Anti-light is used to kill someone we know. Has not happened, but I imagine that might happen. Okay, a sport is mentioned or created. I want to make an argument for this. We just spent a solid half chapter explaining the intricacies of towers. And depending on who you ask, are card games a sport?
I wouldn't call it a sport. I'll give you an asterisk, maybe. I don't think that counts. If you had a game is mentioned or created, then
absolutely.
Come on. But it's also so the spirit of this one, when it was adopted to your board, is probably akin to moments Nose we've ball. Seen in like akin to Mistborn Era 2 stuff, where they're either referencing a literal like sport we have on Earth, or they're like, yeah, this is gonna be big in the future, let's make this game. Like, towers is a tried and true thing that was not created in
right.
our story,
but it's as mentioned, and we spent a whole chapter just explaining the details of it. That's my argument.
I think you might have a better case for dueling.
Okay. I mean, if dueling counts, I don't think this is a good a good square, to be honest.
Yeah, we should have thought of that before we let you put it on your bingo card. Is a card game a sport? No. I don't think
so.
But
it's like a competitive card game. All right, we'll come back to it. The fourth bridge is used in a battle. This one has not happened yet, but I have high hopes for. Rock has dialogue. This one is dwindling quickly. The Pure Lake fish are mentioned. Wait.
Trevor, you could hold on to that, though, if it is the spread of the rock. You didn't say which rock. Yeah. If you could, you can hold on to that. I'll let you make a case at the end of the book for that.
Okay. Yeah, fair enough. The Pure Lake fish are mentioned is a no. Not yet. Ether on Roshar, I have high hopes for. This one is growing on me instead of dwindling. Cultivation kills something, I'm holding out for. Shallan is confirmed pregnant, is obviously already checked off, so we can highlight that one. Yeah, I made it was a joke from several episodes ago. All three shards remain on Roshar. We won't find out for a long time. Sabarion, Plona, Mary, that's never happening. The sibling or the Stormfather dies. That's an interesting CBD. One. Yep. Yeah. Ishik gets married or is confirmed married. Zeth wields two different honor blades. I specifically said he has to fight with them. So yeah. He has two honor blades right now, but he has to hold them at the same time and fight with them. Sigzil ends the book in Shadesmar or Offworld. Three or more Colins die. It is currently snowing. I have high hopes for this one still. A listener rides a chasm fiend. Silverlight is mentioned more than once. I believe it's been mentioned exactly once by Hoyd right now, but it needs to be mentioned one more time. Unethered is described, a Spren unbonds a Radiant, Teft speaks dialogue. If Kaladin was in the spiritual realm, I feel like that would have higher potential. A fourth shard or vessel appears in an epilogue, and more than five unmade are shown, which I believe were at almost one at the moment.
Almost one.
Wait, no, we have Jean-Not. We're at almost two.
Yeah, that's fair. Okay, a question on for you on the fourth shard or vessel appears in an epilogue. Uh-huh. An epilogue, are you referring to like the epilogue of the book? Or are you, do you mean an epigraph?
Do you want to be spoiled? There's multiple epilogues in this book.
Oh, that's right. I forgot that was a detail, so that makes sense. I was like, an epilogue, like you mean the epilogue? Like I was assuming there'd be one epilogue. I was wrong. Okay, no, continue, never mind.
It's like Mistborn Era 2 where there's like five or six different epilogues. Yeah.
Okay, so hold on. The ones you've marked off, are you going to mark them?
I'm in view only mode and I don't know who has permission to this, but
is it Elliot? It's not me.
Well, you're in the wrong file. There's a link.
Here, hold on, I'm gonna stop sharing and then open this. Okay. Yep, there we go. All right, reshare. Okay. Elliot's making notes, I see. Okay, so I will go ahead and mark mine off. Cultivation is the mastermind behind the plot you guys are giving me. Yeah, I'll mess with that here in a second. Okay, did I mark off anything else?
Unless dueling is a sport.
I'm not giving
him that one yet. I'll consider.
Dueling is a sport. I don't think it counts. I'll put it that way. All right, let's go to Elliot's board. Elliot, talk us through what you have and what you don't.
I'm actually feeling really good about a couple of different lines on mine. The combos are looking likely, but kind of going through the top, Tien speaks dialogue. I don't think we've seen that. Two high spren die from anti-light. Haven't seen any of that yet. Entire chapter is dedicated to fabrials or light. I was feeling really good about that coming
off. You got this one.
No, because, well, entire chapter is going to hose me because every single chapter in this book is split up into multiple POVs.
So I remember when you drafted this, we said the majority of a chapter counted.
If we're counting that, I think I might have a case for one of the chapters. But yeah, I'll take it if you're going to give it to me.
I think you got this. There's a Navani chapter where she's talking about the tower and Spren and, you know, light and stuff like that. I think you got this.
All right. I'm down for it.
I'm in a giving mood because we haven't gotten to my board yet. So yeah, absolutely. I think you've got it for sure.
Cool. Well, I'll take that. Dawn shards. Nope. Haven't heard about any Dawn shards that I've noticed. Third Bondsmith. I'm very excited for that one, but not yet. Liv declares she's not hungry. That'll be funny if she does say that. Gavinor or Orodin is the bottom one of the brown line for the color that you were trying to do. Gavinor or Orodin bond a Spren. Still very possible. Haven't seen it yet. Origin is mentioned. I've been looking very closely for this one. Somebody's got to just mention. They just got to throw out the name Origin. It's on the map. Easy to talk about. Has not happened yet that I've seen. Kaladin entered Shadesmar. That one's probably not happening. L has hemallergic spike. Maybe. I don't think that's been
confirmed. Maybe.
It's getting more possible now that
definitely possible.
Yeah.
Well, now we get in. How mad are you going to be if Moash gets a spike and L doesn't?
that'll be kind of funny, actually, if that I'm that close. This middle row. So this is the row that's going to win me the game. I'm calling it right now. Six different heralds have dialogue. We are so close to this. We have five. So five heralds have had dialogue so far, and we had two more in the scene right in front of us. They were just speaking a different language, so we didn't actually get any dialogue quotes of them.
So Yezrian and Shalash were speaking a different language?
Correct.
Or was it Chenarach or someone?
We get Ash the following chapter, so Ash is actually my fifth. But if Yezrian or Chenarach had said anything in dialogue, I would have checked this. But I'm assuming we're going to get that at some point. So I'm pretty confident that I need one more herald. I need one more herald to say anything, and I check that. I've already checked Honor is not dead, which is right next to that. got my freebie space in the middle. So to win the game, I really just need Rissen to use her Dawn Shard. Surely that's got to happen. The novella Dawn Shard would not exist if that wasn't relevant somehow. And then my last one in this row is more than three previously named Windrunners die. There's not a
That'd be tricky.
It could happen, though.
I think you're more likely to get your vertical bingo right in the center, honestly.
Potentially. Well, yeah, potentially. I actually like my diagonal as well, from bottom left to top right, which we'll get to in a second. Hoid leaves Roshar, maybe. More than one herald dies. This is on the diagonal, which I like. More than one herald dies. Does Yezrian count?
We talked about this. We talked about this. Whether Yezrian... I believe Yezrian does not count because we were under the assumption that he was already dead.
Well, see, here's the thing.
That's what I was going to say also.
That's what I was thinking too, but I think we assumed that incorrectly.
Right.
And we learned later that he wasn't quite as dead as we thought, and El deaded him a little more.
I think you've got a case here. I mean, we assumed Yezrian didn't count because he was already dead, but then he wasn't.
Right.
He was 99% dead, and we 100% exactly. dead.
Question for you then: if that is the case, if we count Yezrian, then for the second herald that will need to die to complete this, they're going to have to do the exact same thing as Yezrian of like be captured into the sphere and then the sphere like destroyed.
They will have to be dead in the fullest sense of the term, as far as we know. Like, if they end up like Yezrian at the end of the book, I would count that.
Well, yeah, if they end up like how Yezrian was before the book, like
right.
in his sphere, like captured yes. in the sphere type of thing.
This is one we'll have to argue on later once we have other heralds dead. But
it could be that they all die and there's no.
Yes.
we may not have to quibble. Someone publishes a book, seems likely. Someone enters the chasm on the Shattered Plains, hopefully also likely. This is my favorite one that's the most unlikely, probably on the far right here. Shallan is the only Radiant to reach the fifth ideal. It's strangely specific, and I don't know. I think it'd be kind of funny if nobody gets the fifth ideal but her.
That would be funny.
And then to start my bottom row, one that's looking at ever more likely is Honor is held in full by a vessel, which I think we thought was absolutely wild coming into this book, and that's all we've talked about since.
That's pretty high.
And then a new Shallan persona. I forgot this was on my board. I thought this was on somebody else's.
I thought this was on Paul's board.
Hey, you stole that. No, I'm kidding.
Maybe I did. Zeth will die. Ooh, yeah, could be the conclusion of his story. Adolin becomes a third bondsmith. I'm not ruling that out. Kaladin, Syl are not bonded at the end of the book. Potentially sad. We'll see if it happens. I like where I'm sitting overall on my board.
Yeah, your board looks way better than mine.
I agree. It does look good. I have to be honest. I feel like before the book started, I didn't have very high hopes for your board, but it's looking to shape up pretty nicely. I can't lie. There's a lot that I think are going to happen on here.
All right, Paul, what do we got?
All right. Okay, starting off hot. First square, Roshar is destroyed. To be determined. We'll come back to that. More than two fifth ideals are sworn, so the antithesis to Elliot's prediction, I need not only Shallan, I need multiple. I need two. Oh, more than two, actually. Okay.
Yeah, you need three.
That's a big ask. I don't know about that. Taravangian loses Odium. Feasible, but I don't know what would happen. No idea.
Could happen.
A character we know is revealed to be a Chondra.
Okay.
I don't think this is going to happen. However, my case for this is we had a whole chapter where we talked quite a lot about all the things, all the characters in Warbreaker. I feel like it's feasible that this could be slipped in about someone being
a Chondra. For what it's worth, I am 100% sure there's a Chondra somewhere. The question is just, will it get revealed in this book?
Right. Yeah. I agree with you. We will see the weeping. I was really confident in this. This was my like private little like, yep, we're going to get some little nod back to the weeping. No idea. I'm losing faith in that one. Okay, moving on to the next line. Knights, shades, or rusts are used as an expletive. I've been trying to keep tabs on this, but not very well. It hasn't happened. But I just need one mention. Just one little mention. We'll be good. Xyle and Azure exchange dialogue. Xyle has been mentioned quite a bit in this book, actually. But we have not seen Xyle, so I'm not feeling super strong about it. We have specifically Kaladin says fifth ideal. Could happen. I think that's, TBD. Pattern dies. Sad. I don't know. That'll happen. Massive anti-light fueled explosion. We're getting closer to all of our battles. Maybe something like this will happen. Adolin becomes a Knight Radiant. That one is waning on me quick.
Yeah, that one okay. Just took a huge hit this episode.
Yeah, that one, that's fine. That's fine. Aeta Nauseam is mentioned more than 7 times. I have not been keeping track of this.
I have. It's either 4 or 5 because there was that discussion in the Origin of Songs where we talked to those like ancient singers about Aeta Nauseam, and they mentioned the name Aeta Nauseam like 4 times in that chapter. So that really jumped you up a couple episodes ago.
Yeah. Absolutely. I knew this one was up there, if not done. I have faith that will happen across the book. Okay. We learn what shattered the planes. Absolute wish list. Definitely want to see that.
I think that's pretty high.
I feel decent about that. Vasher and Nightblood exchange 2 lines of dialogues. I really need Xyle to get in here and start talking to people. That's what I really need for my board. We meet all of the living heralds. What's our head count on our heralds here? We've met Taln Shalash. In the spiritual realm, we've met
Yezrani. We've met a dead herald,
we've met a dead herald, which was not on here, but we've met Ishar, Chanarach, Batar. We've met Batar.
We just met Taln.
I already encountered Taln on my list. We've met Kalak. Uh-huh. Who am I missing? There's the other ones. There's Palea.
And we have not seen her.
We have not. We've not. The rest I don't think we have met in this
Pyla
book. Pyla.
Shoot. And where's my cards?
Yeah, I know, right?
Pyla Nail.
Yes, right. Have we met Nail this book?
He was in the prologue.
That's right. He was in the prologue. Okay. So we're missing Palea, however you say it, that one, and whoever's the other one. Who am I missing here?
What's the last one? Ezra, Nishar, Taln. Who's our Truth Watcher?
Truth Watcher was Kalak.
Oh, that's right. Who's our Will Shaper?
Will Shaper. I think it's that one.
Is that Batar?
No, Batar is Edge Dancer, right?
All right, keep going in your bingo card, and then I'll look this up.
Okay, Adolin dies. That's the next one. Would be heartbreaking. That's on my diagonal of sadness. Adolin dies and Pattern dies. We will see the weeping is really just a reference to me weeping from those deaths. we meet Chris. I don't know. Possible. Not possible. Don't know.
Videl.
We will visit Videl. Either Videl. You're right. That's who it is. Okay.
Videl and Palea. We've met everybody else.
Okay. If we meet those two heralds, then we're good. We've done it. We have a bonus credit for Yezrian, you know. okay. We will visit either Braze or Ashen or both.
You got this one. You got this one. I was on the record on the podcast saying if Devani walks towards that portal, you can get it. And that's exactly what she did. You've got this.
Okay. I mean, I'm cool with that, Elliot. Does it count in your book? We've seen Ashen through this portal for 2 chapters.
I I think so. And specifically to, it talks about at multiple times, Ishar standing on the other side, holding the portal open. So
if you
loop in like we as Ishar, a character we know standing on the other side of that portal on Ashen doing the things, I think it's there.
If I had to really go hard and argue on this, my argument was going to be, so Navani walks up to the portal and is looking through the portal. If you say you are visiting a place and you're looking, you're in, let's say you're, I don't know, if I'm visiting my street, I'm looking out the window at my street, does that count? You know, like I'm in my house, I'm looking out the window. Have I visited my street?
This is the debate of, does a layover count as visiting that country? If you have a layover in Germany, have you been to Germany if you've been in the Hamburg airport?
Yeah. Okay. Great. Quick question. Anyways, I think it counts. I think it's, if that doesn't count, then I think y'all are being a little mean. Anyways, is mentioned. I don't, this has an asterisk. I don't remember exactly why. I know we talked
about
this.
I don't know what the asterisk is.
We'll back to it. I don't remember of a specific mention. Okay, last line. A third storm is summoned. It's been alluded to. I'm hopeful. More than six shards are mentioned. Epigraphs count. We've had our three primary shards, and we have had Valor. Right? The Shard of Valor.
And
those are our
had Harmony mentioned, too.
Harmony has been mentioned?
Yeah, because...
Ooh, Odium talks one or two.
That's a good question.
That's a good question.
Odium talks about Harmony and how he can't act because he's Harmony. So,
well, if I have more than six, and Harmony would put me at five, and if I get one more,
three.
Let's just say we count Harmony as two. You know, then let's just say that if it comes down to it.
Yeah, anyway, you're either four or five right now. No, you're either at five or six.
If Harmony, yes, I'm at five or six, depending on if Harmony is one or two. Okay, a sprint is passed from one Radiant to another. Don't know. Dalinar's butt is mentioned. Really hopeful for this one.
Didn't this happen? Did I make that up?
I think you're making that up, but I could be wrong.
We had a lift point of view. Surely she mentioned it.
Great question. I feel like I need to look back, but I feel like that would have stuck out to me.
She talked about plenty of other crude things, but not Dalinar's butt that I recall.
I agree. I don't think so. But if anyone listening to this, if it has already been mentioned, please point it out because I don't want to miss it. Okay, and then Tanavast, last but not least, Tanavast has a point of view chapter or interlude. Really... once again, wish list. I really want this to happen.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the line that it is on, I don't think is conducive to that being part of a bingo. But, you know.
Maybe. This diagonal could maybe happen.
Maybe.
Azure, I don't have Azure's high hopes.
I agree. I don't have high hopes for Xyle and Azure.
Vivenna's probably not on the planet anymore, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I unfortunately agree.
Epilogue, maybe.
Yeah,
that's true. Okay,
just need one mention.
It would be funny if Roshar is destroyed and Xyle and Azure exchanging dialogue is what doesn't get you this diagonal.
That is funny. I think it'd be hilarious if somehow those two are checked. Roshar is destroyed and they exchange dialogue, but we don't get a Tanavast POV. And that's what really would make me sad.
Yeah.
Anyways.
All right. Elliot is by far the leader here. Not only does he have two, but he is a lot more likely.
Several in the works. Yeah.
All righty. That will conclude it for today. Let me reiterate next week. Next week is chapters 53 through I-8. Thanks for joining me, Paul and Elliot.
See ya.
Doodles. See ya.